Welcome back. This is The Change Show with Simon Phillips and my very special guest this week, Maria Pressentin. Did I get that right, Maria?
That's perfect, Simon. Thank you.
Excellent. So Maria's joined me today all the way from Singapore. And I know that we've got a growing audience out there, so it's wonderful to have you on the show. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Thank you, Simon. It's really
fantastic.
A pleasure to have me. Thank you.
Maria, tell us a little bit about yourself. Then where were you born? Where did you grow up? And I understand you might have traveled around a little bit.
Yes, I have. I was born and raised in Macau, and that's right next to Hong Kong. It used to be a Portuguese colony.
Yeah.
And then I started my international life when I was 15. So I've lived in 8 countries, learned some languages on the way, and I feel very fortunate that I've had this opportunity to just roam around the world and get to know people that are very, very different from myself and people that I grew up with.
And what brought you to Singapore then?
Well, you could say that is kind of luck, but it's also like driven by me. I absolutely wanted to go to Singapore. I've been working out of a business trip in Singapore for a couple of months, you know, turning over some projects, opening organizations for a major multinational in Europe at that time. I was based in Munich.
No.
And then a few years later, I found myself in a situation of living in North Africa, which, you know, was really, really pleasant. Gave birth to a little baby while I was there. And my son, he's already 14 now. And then my husband and I decided that, you know, it was time for us to move on. And there were different opportunities. And when we were looking at what those opportunities were, Singapore really came through. And we were so lucky. We were really happy to have that opportunity to live in Singapore. And we've actually been there for 12 years.
12 years, wow.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Sometimes you think you're just going to land somewhere for a few years and wake up, as you say, 12 years later.
I chose to become a citizen. I'm actually originally Portuguese, born and raised as Portuguese, but I chose to be a citizen and the country really welcomed me. So I'm very grateful.
Fantastic. So this show's all about leaders of change. And people who are out there trying to make a difference. And I know you support a load of people in that space. Tell us a little bit then about your career and how you found yourself heading up Leadership Scientific.
Oh, yeah. So I was actually in Singapore. As soon as I arrived in Singapore, didn't work for about a year because my son at that time was, you know, not even a year old. But then straight after that, I had a background from corporate, so I was doing a lot of work in corporate. I was an employee in multinational organizations, Fortune 500 organizations throughout the 15 years. And I decided that that was enough. Why did I get into leadership development? Well, nothing is really a coincidence. I had a spectrum of experiences during corporate, some excellent experiences, some not so excellent experiences. And during that time, the not so excellent experiences have given me the opportunity to think about what do I really want to do afterwards. Mm-hmm. So when people are talking about the Great Resignation today, I find it very interesting because that was what I was thinking about years ago. For about 15 years ago, I was thinking, you know, what's the meaning of all this, right? And there's so many toxic behaviors that are happening in organizations. Can I myself do something about it? And that's how I actually kind of crossed over and decided what skills could I learn to become a better leader? And then everything catapulted into how about if I just help leaders?
Yeah.
And that's what it became, yeah.
Yeah, I did some videos recently about the Great Resignation, and as you say, all of the things that people discovered in the last couple of years and started to ask themselves those bigger life questions, those were the reasons, just like you, why I set up my own business way back when, because I wanted life to be more than the trudge back and forth to work on somebody else's behalf. And there was also, I had a bigger life purpose, I guess, in some respects, in terms of wanting to get out there and help and support people. So I totally resonate with that, Maria, totally. So tell me then a little bit about the journey since you've set up your own business. What have you been up to?
Well, that's really interesting because I've only just set up my business. I've always had a business on the background, but I did work for the Ken Blanchard companies in the US, which is a major, you know, consultancy company for a decade. And then afterwards, I set up my business to grow. So my business was actually on the background and I was doing a lot of coaching, but then now I've actually set it up to grow just over a year ago. And it's a very strong direction that I'm taking right now, because over the past few years, I've been very fortunate to have met Ken Blanchard himself, and I've worked quite a bit in the company around the topic of servant leadership. That being said, you know, there's not much happening in terms of servant leadership in Asia. It's a concept that is well known. It's not a new concept. It's there for 40 years already, but nobody's really picking it up here in Asia. And so I decided that that's probably the right direction, because there are so many behaviors that are based on my research that have already been published. And I've got a book that is published as well on that, that there are so many behaviors that are underutilized in organizations, especially in Asia Pacific. That I decided that this is a core direction that needs to be driven by somebody. And I decided to actually just push this forward, given that I'm also a researcher in organizations, in addition to the consultancy and leadership development that I do. So I'm very passionate about that. I don't see this only solely as a business. I see this as a calling.
Yeah.
Because of everything that I've been through so far in my life, in my professional life, and also in my private life.
I love that. And the servant leadership then, so for the people listening and tuning in, tell us a little bit about what differentiates servant leadership from the other styles. Specifically, I'm interested to hear what's maybe the dominant style out in Asia Pacific.
Yeah, those are really great two questions. So let me just split that into two segments, right? So let's talk a little bit about what is servant leadership and how should we actually see it? Because there's a lot of misconception around servant leadership as a definition. And then, you know, if you could just remind me afterwards, if I get really carried away on servant leadership, to talk about the second point, right? What dominates right now in Asia Pacific? But it's actually, it's going through an evolution. So let's talk about servant leadership. So there are two words to it. There's servant and there's the leader. Obviously, this is a concept that came from the ideology from Robert Greenleaf, that leaders should be servant. And if you take that ideal, you know, that ideology of two names, servant leadership, into Asia, but even in Europe or South America or most of the world, first they're going to get a shock and they're going to go, I don't want to be a servant, I'm a leader, right? I lead people, I don't want to follow. And that's why further research is so important. So for the past 30 years, people have been researching about servant leadership, but there isn't a consensus on the definition of what servant leadership really is. What I actually have found in terms of the multitude of research is that there's a lot of different behaviors that come from being a servant leader. And they're demonstrated in organizations and different communities and situations and types of organizations. But there's no consensus in terms of what is. Now, if you go back to the father of servant leadership, Greenleaf's quotes, there's a very important quote that actually talks about, you know, the person that is performing as a servant leader has the motivation to serve first before leading. And the motivation to serve first is to serve others, to grow others, as opposed to serving the self.
Can I just jump in there? And when they're growing others, is the intention to grow others into servant leaders, or is the intention to grow others into different styles of leadership?
Well, it's to grow others to be successful.
Okay.
So if let's say if you were to interact with me, and you don't have to be reporting to anybody, right? So if you were to interact with me and you were asking for some help, and or I could see that you needed some help, and we had, you know, agreed or identified what your goals were, and if you, one of your goals were to be a servant leader, then I would facilitate that growth if I was able to do so, right? So the interesting thing is that what really distinguishes, to answer your first question, distinguishes servant leadership compared to the other leadership styles, which I've actually compared and contrasted and been published on that as well, is that all those other leadership styles, like, you know, transformational leadership, empathic leadership, authentic leadership, and so forth, there are a lot more. They're really useful and they're very helpful. They all intend to develop people and to help people, etc., right? And to develop leadership skills on people. The biggest difference between servant leadership and these other leadership styles that I mentioned, and there are more, obviously, because, you know, there's a multitude of them that are coming out as well, is that servant leadership has this core essence, and it's completely announced formally that it's serving others before self.
Okay.
And what this actually means is I'm actually thinking about others more than I think myself.
And when we, as you know, the Change Show is powered by the GC Index, and that's how you and I met, because you're a GCologist as well.
Yes, absolutely.
If we think about the different styles of leadership and how they might emerge relating to the GC Index, I see a strong correlation between servant leadership and playmaker. Because playmaker's intention is to help and serve and grow others. Do you see it as clear as that, or can you imagine all of the different proclivities being servant leaders?
Yeah, the fact that, I mean, that's a great question. The fact that the playmaker has that intention to help everybody work together and harmonize the relationship so that you could actually move things forward with each other, that's probably the first intention that you see the strongest through the playmaker. But with the work that I'm doing, and I'm still researching on this, what I actually see from the other proclivities is that servant leadership can start with the intention, but you could actually learn it as a skill.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so what's really interesting is that, you know, others might also have the intention but might not show it because they don't have those natural abilities of a playmaker, but they could actually show it in a different way. So for example, a strategist, they would ask questions to actually intend for you to move forward with a better way of thinking, like a strategist. So it is all about looking at, you know, on a deeper end with the other proclivities to see what are the potentials that they could have with a mingling between giving them the skill and actually checking out their intention from the very get-go. So I think it's possible with all proclivities in a different intensity and probably with a different kickstart point, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. So back to the other part of my question then, which is, what have you perceived to be the dominant leadership styles out there in Asia Pacific?
Yeah, that's a great question. And thank you for getting back to that. The dominant leadership style for Asia Pacific, and Asia Pacific is, let me just warn you, it's a very colorful set of cultures. You've got big, small countries, and it's about the only continent, if I'm not wrong, please don't quote me, but I think it's about the only continent that if you want to go from country to country, you've got to cross a band of water. So you've got to fly. So except for a few countries that, you know, like Southeast Asia that you could actually drive, but it's going to take you forever. Mm-hmm. So what I'm trying to say here is that the cultures are so diverse, it's incredulous. Mm-hmm. That and the languages are all different, right? And there are multitude of dialects. in one country alone. Now, that being said, there are very strong similarities, an energy of a leadership style. So what I've actually seen in the search that I've done so far, and there's multitudes of research that actually complements and confirms this, is that the paternalistic leadership style in Asia Pacific is quite dominant. Now, what does that actually mean? It's divided into three characteristics. So the paternalistic style was like father-like style. You've got, you know, building the morality of the organization. You've got protecting the people in the organization, which means being benevolent leader, being really kind and helpful and benevolent leader. And you've got the autocratic characteristic, which is, don't question me. I've just told you what to do. It's my way or the highway because I'm the leader. So in return, as a leader, I actually demand and expect loyalty because of my position power, because I protect you, I'm benevolent, and I build morality so that everybody's in peace. So I will take care of your family as long as you're working well, and I'll take care that you have a position. Now that's evolved.
Yes.
Over the years, right? Because, you know, now you see the paternalistic style more and more resonant with the, you know, local entrepreneurs. But if you're dealing, you know, that like the older generation of local entrepreneurs, but if you're dealing with the younger generation of internet-based businesses, then you're no longer necessarily that because of the younger generation coming through. Now, how is servant leadership directly related to this? It's quite powerful because servant leadership, and back to the first question that you were asking me, what's so different about servant leadership? It's connected to the second question, because servant leadership has two great measures, and they could be either quantitative, make it so, and qualitative. The two great measures of servant leadership is, you are only a servant leader if, as a result of serving others, that those others have grown. So there's an evidence measurable that they've grown in terms of being developed. And the second measure is if their well-being is being better. So if they've developed on the well-being, they've developed in their skills to be successful on whatever they're doing and trying to learn, then these two measures, quantitatively or qualitatively, it depends on how you set the goals, then it means you've been a successful servant leader.
Okay. Because I was going to ask you about the people that you are actually supporting, or rather the people that the leaders are serving. So yeah. There's a lot of information out there about followership as well as leadership.
Yes, that's right.
And followership comes with a certain level of expectation as well. So is there an expectation of the followers in Asia Pacific of a different style of leadership, of a paternalistic style of leadership? Or is there a growing shift that is starting to demand more servant leadership, or even potentially other styles of leadership?
My answer to you both, it's yes. Okay. Because I think we're going through a transition. I think this is the right time for us to actually get ready. So the paternalistic leadership style is still dominant, because you've got a lot of large organizations, locally large organizations, and not just multinationals. And even if the multinationals, don't forget that we've got three or four generations actually working in the same company now, right? Especially the big giants. So we've got to be careful, because we're in transition. You've got the newcomers, you know, millennials are already there, and they're going into the leadership roles, the older millennials. They're early 40s right now. And then you've got the Gen Z coming up, and the older Gen Zs are already, you know, right into the first or 2 years of work. And so they're demanding, they might not know the concept of servant leadership, but they are demanding servant leader-like behaviors.
Yeah.
Yes. And so that mindset needs to be changing. Behaviors might exist here and there, but they're not structured. People are using it not in a very structured manner. But I think if you want a critical mass to shift, you need to start changing people's mindset. And that's what I write about. Back to the question about followership, right? Expectations. It's a mixture, right? I expect my leader to teach me something. I expect my leader to be my friend. I expect my leader to be charismatic. I also expect my leader to, you know, to build a caring relationship with me, develop me, but at the same time, a leader that develops him or herself. Because if they don't do that, I'm not going to respect my leader. That's what's coming up right now in my research.
So I guess there's that whole generation then that's looking for a framework. They, as you say, they're looking for behaviors, but they don't necessarily see it under a banner of servant leadership. So if you can get out there and start talking to them about the framework of servant leadership, that's going to help them solidify their thinking around that.
That's so nice.
Did you say you had a book coming out?
I already have a book. I have a book. Okay. It has come out. I'm going to be launching the book on the 25th of March. Mm-hmm. That's available information on LinkedIn as well. It's under Maria Presentine on my LinkedIn, and you could find out more about that. And my book is actually an academic book. We have a huge number of professors, collaborators around the world. I myself write, I've written a couple of chapters, and I primarily focus on the Asian research. I have one particular research that talks about inclusiveness that I've done with a collaborator in the US. So I've actually worked on two regions on this particular book, but this book is very multinational, multicultural, because I've got collaborators, professors around the world, different universities from, you know, Africa, from Arabia, from Europe, South America, US, and they're really, really lovely professors that have written, you know, a multitude of research. I'm the editor-in-chief as well as an author, so I've compiled everything together and we've published it, and we're going to be launching it out and about end of March.
What's it called?
It's a mouthful. It's called Key Factors and Use Cases of Servant Leadership Driving Organizational Performance.
Okay, brilliant. Well, anybody wants to know more, that's obviously the book to go to with all that.
Yes.
Global research involved as well. That sounds terrific.
Yes. Yes.
Wonderful. So yes. We mentioned briefly the GC Index. What does your GC Index picture look like?
I'm primary polisher.
Mm-hmm.
Close to primary, secondary game changer.
Okay. So totally on the obsessive side of the...
Very obsessive on my research, very obsessive about pushing forward my calling, which is to develop others. Yeah.
Wonderful.
Going nuts on that.
Maria, we're going to take a quick break and then we're going to come back. I'd like to find out how you've used your research and your understanding and all of your experience as you are tackling a bit of personal change, maybe. Because I think that those real life examples really light it up for people who are maybe going through their own challenges right now. So we'll do that after the break. Welcome back. This is The Change Show with Simon Phillips and my very, very special guest, Maria Presentine, all the way from Singapore. I'm based in the UK. This is probably going out to, the biggest chunk of our audience are in the US. So, you know, wonderful to be pulling the globe together in the name of servant leadership. It's just like your book, Maria.
Thank you.
So, Maria, what I like to ask my guests is, because, as I say, lots of people out there right now, you mentioned the Great Resignation, so many people are struggling or rethinking their whole lives or maybe going through a period where it's a bit bumpy, yeah?
Yep.
And I think the stuff that you and I do and people who've appeared on the show, we're out there trying to help people like that. But one of the things I think that helps most is it's almost like as a case study, tell us about a time in your life when you were going through something significant, a significant change maybe, and how did you get through it? What tools did you draw on? How did you make your way through it?
Gosh, Simon, I don't even know where to begin, because I feel like I've had multiple challenging times, but I'm so grateful for all of them, because I've never go back and say, you know, why me? And I've never go back to say, I wish I had it differently, because, you know, it's built me to be the person that I am, more grounded today and more mature today. And I actually found my calling, which is to serve others. Mm. And I've been actually doing that for the past 2 decades, when I, you know, realize, you know, all the suffering that you go through, you could turn it into a positive energy and help others that are going through similar things. So I've had traumatic experiences in life, but the biggest one that I could, you know, still resonates today, but you know, I'm in a much, much better place today, is that I've actually given birth to a first child, and he, you know, I was his mother for 2 weeks, and he passed away. But that was a major aha moment for me. It took me years to finish mourning. Yeah. But today I actually, you know, I celebrate him by turning the whole thing around and say, you know what, what's going to put a smile in my life going forward is to help others, is to serve others. And I'm not the type that I'm Mother Teresa, I'm going to go to Africa or India and you know, take care of people and you know, physically, you know, that's not me. So within what I can accept in terms of what I do, you know, like you were saying, you know, if in the GC index, I'm a polisher, I'm a game changer, I love to do research, I love to teach, I love to coach. So as soon as I, you know, reflected on how can I do things differently, you know, when I finished the morning, I started to really learn new skills, because I came from sales, I came from corporate, and I'm like, how can I reuse my existing business skills and leverage it and add maybe additional skills, because I love learning anyways, do something for the world. And I uncovered myself through that. And well, today I'm doing a lot of research on servant leadership, and I'm pushing this forward because I think the world really needs it. And I'm really here to create that critical mass as much as possible in my lifetime.
I was reflecting the other day on the unique roles that we all have to play in moving the world forward. So there are people who are practical, hands-on people who want to be there with an individual, and they feel like they're making a tangible difference by the proximity. Yeah. And there are others that write, and like yourself, and research and dig into things to help broaden understanding and get a bigger message out there. And that's great. We don't all have to be what we might imagine is the perfect role for someone who's going to go out there and support people. It's actually a framework. It's a network of people that creates the support that we need in life. And if I think about all the different people that you've involved in your book, I mean, that's an incredible network of people all focused on one thing. How can we share the message of servant leadership?
Yes.
Effectively, quickly, and, you know, with as much detail as possible so that people can really believe in it. And I think, given the job that you said you're trying to do there in Asia Pacific, you need to go out there with research that proves to people that this is effective.
Yes. Yeah. So just to add to what you were saying, because it's so important, this book is really the evidence that there is servant leadership already being used and successfully in creating organizational performance. Mm. So I wanted to bring out a book that is not just theory. Of course, it's the academic scientific book. It has theory to back it up. That being said, it is on the ground research in diverse number of countries. Like you said, it's a global book that says, you know, this is where in this type of organization, the evidence of servant leadership has transformed the organization and made it more successful. This is where it's replicated again in another region, another country, another territory, another society. So it's a book of evidence of performance, but driven by servant leadership behaviors.
And I think that's what's going to make it really resonate for people. The fact that you've taken such a diverse group of societies and organizations and countries even to understand how this works. Coming back to your own circumstances and your own story, what work had you done to give yourself such a strong mindset? Because that type of event, as you say, it's incredibly difficult to deal with and to work through. And as you say, it was 2 years of mourning there. What would you attribute, or is there a mentor? Is there a book? Is there just experience? What do you think helped you have such a strong mindset that you were able to move on?
Yeah, that's a wonderful question. At the time of mourning, I had no clue in terms of direction, and I've always been somebody that, you know, sets my own goals, measure my own goals and fulfill my goals. And then I go on to the next big thing, right? So I'm never tired and I'm not afraid of change. But what's really interesting, when you feel victimized, you feel that something is happening to you instead of for you, then that energy transcends into something quite low and negative. What I started to do is to work on my spirituality. So it's beyond religion. It's really becoming somebody that is more spiritual. And rather than working on my physical self, I was working on my soul. And so that's the first thing. But the second thing, in terms of being tangible, living here, would be I started to give myself deadlines to feeling the negativity. So I started to actually put a date to when am I going to stop crying? When am I going to stop stopping feeling bad or feeling sorry for myself? When am I going to start shifting? And I created milestones how to get there. Now, is it always successful? No, because you're dealing with depression, and it's something a lot bigger than yourself, right? But then at that time, I wasn't a coach, so I didn't have those tools. So I had, you know, great teachers that I sought, and I found them that have actually been really kind and supportive. And so I came out of that depression, and I started to build a life that I wanted to create in honor of my firstborn that had passed away. One of the things that I promised myself during that period was, I'm never going to take a job that is unmeaningful going forward. Because people take jobs because they have to support the family, and I appreciate that very much. I really understand the situation. I was one of them. But then I said to myself, I will always charge. I will always need to have a salary, because you need to survive here, right, on this earth.
Yeah.
It's a matter of exchange. It's an energy. That being said, I said to myself, you charge, but you charge with integrity. And you're going to be charging because you're doing something exceptionally meaningful for the others. And so that started my concept of, hey, is this meaningful? Am I going to serve you? Because if it's not, I'm not going to do it.
So the big mental hurdle that people will be thinking at home is, how can I match up meaningful work with that ability to earn money? And that's one of the biggest fears I've heard my coaches talk about when they're thinking about career change. It's like, well, I want to do this because this is my heart's calling. This is what I want to do. But there's no money in it, is their perception. Did you have that same hurdle?
Yes, I did. I did. But I didn't let that stop me. Because one of the things that it's important for people to understand is, you can always have your big dreams, but what's your first step? And so start really small, start with milestones. You can have huge, humongous goals. I mean, look at Elon Musk. He wanted to go to Mars, but he had a first step. And so what I would encourage people to pay attention to is you've got this huge goal, huge vision. Don't give it up. What's your first step? What do you have to do today that we're not going to push it until tomorrow because you're just going to start? And then something else is going to happen tomorrow. And then the third day and the fourth day. Start now. So it's not a diet, right? It's not like, oh, I'm going to start dieting on Monday and never Monday never comes. You're talking about your vision. You're talking about your way of life. Start today. No matter how small, just start.
In my 24/7 system, which is part of the Dynamic Time Management book, there's a goal map in there. And the goal map says, imagine a piece of paper that's landscape. Put your goal in the top right-hand corner. And then give it a time frame, because as you said, putting the time on it, it's not necessarily going to be achieved in that time frame, but at least it gives you a mindset that says that's what I'm aiming for.
That's it.
Then break it down. So that what I suggest is, if let's say that big goal is 3 years, how will you know in 18 months time that you're on your way and you're moving in the right direction? What does that look like in 18 months time? And then, you know, maybe just a few months time. But then I say, just like you said, and what are you going to do tonight? I had a really funny story a few years back. So I was running a workshop for a young group of employees. And when one of the people in the room had decided her big goal was to have a family, and she was about 22, 23, something like that. And when I said, and what are you going to do tonight? There was this huge roar of laughter at the back of the room because they were thinking, what do I need to do tonight then to get started?
That's funny. That's a lot of fun. Yeah. No, that sparks great conversation and then you go into action, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So thank you, Maria. And thank you for sharing, you know, such a personal story. Because there, as I said, there will be people listening with their own personal challenges right now.
Absolutely.
And you're right, take time to grieve. No, there's no rush. There's nobody saying you have to stop grieving. There's nobody saying that, you know, you have to do anything other than what feels right in the moment. But do keep looking around for ways of helping yourself and getting out of that situation. So thank you for sharing that one.
And I think people have a tendency, and myself included, right? People have a tendency to give the self too much pressure.
Mm.
And, you know, you give yourself imaginary pressure that actually it doesn't exist. So if that step back out a little bit and see it from an observer's perspective, who's pressurizing you to do anything at all? Because you get so overwhelmed, you end up not doing anything and you start to procrastinate. Because more often than not, my coachees that want to start a new business or want to transition a life, even if they are in corporate, and I work with a lot of senior leaders in multinational organization, they have a tendency like, you know, I'll do charity, I'll be benevolent when I retire. I'm like, why do you have to retire? Why can't you start now when you are 30, 40, 50? You're still very, very active and full of energy and you're not close to retirement age, right? So start now, because there's just so much that the world needs from you and all of us contribute equally, like you were saying, Simon. I really agree with that.
Yeah. Fantastic. You're so right, Maria. The world needs more change makers. We're going to take a quick break now. Welcome back. This is The Change Show with Simon Phillips. Maria, thank you for sharing everything that you've done so far, all the work that you're pulling together on a global scale. It's all important, but what I would say, it's not as important as the next bit of conversation we're going to have, which is, what's your favorite song from the 70s, 80s or 90s? That lifts your spirit. It might be related to your story. I know you've done a little bit of research into what this might be, but does it relate to your story, or is it just something that brings you alive? And so tell us what it is.
Yeah, I've got a couple of songs. I mean, I love dancing, right? So I've got, you know, and I'm half Latin, I'm half Asian. So I love a bunch of Latin songs. That being said, I don't know whether it was 80s or 90s. It's a pretty loud song called I've Got the Power, and it was actually featured in one of the Hollywood comedy films as well. Because, you know, when you're feeling down, just listen to that voice, I've got the power, and it just feels like, wow, you know. And then another one that I think it's a nice feature song, you know, this month on the 8th of March was the International Women's Day, right? I think there's a Men's Day as well, sometime in the year as well. So I'll remind you of that afterwards. But March is the kind of like the International Women's Month, and I was very fortunate and pleased to be asked to write a small script on that, and it was published by Saito University in Malaysia. I'm really grateful to them. And, you know, I was thinking, you know, what would be a good song that celebrates women? And so for the moment, I think it's from Fifth Harmony, so it's a girls group. I don't know whether they still exist, but and it's called That's My Girl, because women need to come out more, and there's just so much good energy, there's so much that women can offer. So I thought to myself, that'd be really appropriate because our interview is happening now in March.
Wonderful. I'm just looking it up to see when that came out. I have my good friend Google here, that's going to tell me. let's have a look. Released 2016.
Wow. Okay. Well, it's very recent.
But I think the other song you mentioned, I've Got the Power.
Yeah.
I think that one, I think you're going to be safe with that one. I think that's a 90s song. Let me have a look.
It's a 90s, right? Yeah.
Snap, I've Got the Power. And that was, let's have a look. Well, I don't need to look it up anymore because I definitely know that that's a 90s song. So yeah, we'll have to go with that one for your track. But I do recommend having a listen to that track by Fifth Harmony. As you say, it's a strong message. In fact, one of the little comments that's below it on YouTube is, this makes me feel like a strong woman and I'm a man.
I love that. I love that. I mean, men and women, and no matter the gender, there's a duality in energy in all of us. There's masculinity and there's a femininity in all of us. And I've had clients, coaching clients, training clients that are male in gender, but their feminine manifestation is a lot stronger than their masculine manifestation.
Yes.
And then, and vice versa, I've had women clients that are very action oriented, and they're when they're really focusing on their goals and organizational performance, then they're really driving that to come through, and so that masculinity has to flare up, right?
Yeah.
I think it's very much dependent on the roles, because when we go home and take care of our family and we're nurturing and hugging our children, you know, that femininity normally comes back up again, right? So we're amazing beings, right? We're a mixture of both energies.
We're all capable of raising those energies at any time. And it's only probably the last 100, 200 years where they've been given the label of feminine and masculine.
Yes.
And at the time that those thoughts were emerging and that those theories were emerging, there was a very specific role for women in society and a very specific role for men in society.
That's right.
Whereas what we're starting to discover now, and couldn't have come, you know, soon enough from my perspective, is that we've all got all of those energies. And yeah, we choose which ones we want to access at any time. And if people just recognize they always have a choice, I think that's the most empowering thing that they can have in their toolkit.
You're so right, because when it comes back to organizations, right, and take one activity like giving feedback, people don't realize that feedback, it's not necessarily a bad thing. There's the positive and there's the redirection. So there's the praising feedback that you've got to be specific about it so that people can appreciate that you've actually observed and you earn as a leader the way to give people feedback. So if you observed their success and praised them. And then, you know, being specific in terms of, you know, you're off track a little bit, so let's realign you. So let's redirect you into the right direction to help you succeed on the goals. So feedback right now has been taken a very negative connotation. And one of the things that I'm really proponent of is, you know, choose your energy and prepare yourself as a leader or a mentor or a coach when you go and give feedback. Because if you're serious about taking forward servant leadership mindset and behaviors, then give it in the most loving way possible, because you're trying to grow the person.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Couldn't agree more. Let's pause there and listen to I've Got the Power by Snap. What an amazing record this is. Great choice. There you go. That was Snap and I've Got the Power. What a fantastic record. Now, we weren't able to get up and dance there, were we? Because we're both in our studio here today, but I'm sure we would have otherwise. Maria, what a fantastic guest you've been. I've really, really enjoyed our conversation. So your book's coming out on March 25th. That's the big launch. How can people listening, how can they find out more? How can they get involved? How can they buy the book? Anything at all you want to share?
Lovely. Thank you, Simon. You've been a wonderful host. Thank you for having me. So in terms of the launch, just connect to Maria Presentine on LinkedIn, and I always answer. I'm always very active on LinkedIn. Connect to me and I'll be able to invite you for the launch, which is happening on the 25th of March in the afternoon of Singapore time at 3 p.m. And with regards to getting hold of the book, it's actually available on Amazon.com, and it's also available through the publisher's site, and the sales site is called IGI Global.education or something, but it's IGI Global, that's our publisher, and okay. It's a huge scientific publisher. Very grateful. They're actually based in the USA, and so I'm going to be making those two links available through Simon for connectivity as well.
Yeah, absolutely. If you just ping those over to me, we'll put those in the show notes.
Lovely, thank you.
And hello, excellent. Maria, what a pleasure. Go and have a lovely evening out there in Singapore.
Thank you.
And we will catch up again very soon. Please come back and tell us how the book goes, where your adventures take you next, and we'd love to catch up again, maybe later in the year.
It's my pleasure, Simon. Thank you so much.
Excellent. This was The Change Show with Simon Phillips and my very special guest, Maria Presentine. We will see you again this time next week. Have a great one.